with the Eagles. Okay, hey everybody, we are back. We are back. Can I get an R? Can I get an O? Can I get a V? Which stands for get up. Stand up. We have got some work to do and we need your highest rate of vibration to make it happen. So we have had the pleasure the last couple of days of just being absolutely fire hosed, in a good way, by Mr. Steve Baker. And so we are going to give him a rousing round of applause for the standing ovation performance he is about to give us. So, Mr. Steve Baker.
Can I take this? Make it last longer. A high five? Okay. Is this a setup?
On the side?
Yep.
Down low? Okay, I'll
go. Why, I oughta. Man, when you do that ROV thing, don't you love it when Sherry does it? Because I'm waiting some year. Howard's going to have a special guest, and she's going to be up here, give me an R, give me an O, give me a V, and Karl Rove is going to come up. I'm pretty sure that's going to actually happen. Are you guys having a great conference? That's a dumb question, isn't it? Because I can see from the back of the room what's happening. And wasn't Dr. Hearn amazing last night? Wow. So I want to say thank you, a special thank you to all the nice people that I've been seeing out in the, you know, the breakfast nook and the, you know, a little coffee over here and this and that. It's been great. You guys are amazing. And this is, again, I know I said it yesterday, you probably didn't believe me, but this is what the backbone of America really is. It is small and mid-sized businesses. You're creating all that makes this place good. So what am I doing up here again? You must be asking. Did he get him cheap? Is that the question? Is that, because if he paid 50 grand for John Maxwell, I can put on my Barry White if I need to. So what people have been asking me yesterday, and I know a lot of you, I can make eye contact with you and see this. A lot of you came up to me, and because you signed my book, and at first my ego is going, oh, this is amazing, I can't wait to tell Joanne. And then I go, oh, they really are like, well, how do you do that bonus plan again? And so we'd flip to the part of the book, right? What I'd like to do is walk you through the 10 steps of implementation. And I think that would be very useful for you, and it's a great setup for you to go, okay, is this right for our organization? Because you do have to decide what systems you're going to implement and which ones you don't have time to. Because what I don't want you to do is take on one more thing and then FTI it. I don't want to see it gathering dust on the shelves, as Howard put it. I really want it to be used because that's where the magic is. Now, Christian, if you can double check me on this, what we have gone over in the last couple of days are the principles and practices of the great game of business and the three circles that looks like. But we also came up with three really good things for you to take home, whether or not we ever talk again. And so I want to remind you of these three axioms, if you will, or the mantras that we use. We're going to build a business of business people who think and act and feel like owners. Make sure that you've got that in your planner, in your book. However you keep notes, if it's in a tablet, please put it under. These are things to think about every single day. What if I focused on building a business of business people who think and act and feel like owners? And remember, no matter what you create, a goal, a reward system, a theme, anything at all, I want you to remember people support what they help create. It's really valuable because when you get buy-in, you get commitment. When you get commitment, you get execution. And as Jack Stack says, numbers are just stories about people. So if you really think about it, you don't create any numbers in your business. Anybody want to fight me on it? Who creates the numbers in your business? Everybody that works for you is creating a number, good or bad, every single day. So let's make sure that those stories are coming out in our day-to-day interactions. And then finally, of course, the company is the product. With that as a central theme, that leads us to this idea of creating an education program, an accountability program, and of course an incentive program around building a great company. And this is what it looks like, of course. And you know the critical numbers right at the center. Well, if these are the principles of the game, how do you implement it? It's not a linear process, as you might think, of like, well, I'll do some formal financial literacy training, and then I'll start to expose them to some numbers and that sort of thing. Yeah, you can do it that way, but we've, in all the 40 years we've been doing this, I'm telling you, there is a process. It's the 10 steps that we feature in Get in the Game. And so when Jack really published this first book in 1992, remember, he had already been doing his great game of business for about a decade. In fact, someone asked me yesterday the best question. Whatever happened to the $9 million? How quickly did they pay that off? Within 2 years, they were able to knock that debt so far down that they could start paying bonuses. And then they started to say, how can we make this some sort of a situation where we could have employee ownership? At the time, ESOPs were brand new. 401ks weren't even out of diapers yet. Is that not funny? All right, I'm doing a financial conference in a couple of weeks. I will not use that one. Here's the thing. You're my test audience. So what I'm trying to say is when the world found out about the Great Game of Business, I told you, Jack didn't think anyone would ever read this book. He couldn't understand why they would even give him an advance on it. But it became very, very popular, and that's why Rich and I wrote the Get in the Game book. It's the 10 steps. It's the how-to to Jack's original book. Is that clear? Great. So if there's 10 steps, what do they look like? And let's just walk through them quickly for you. First of all, what we have here is a graphic that it thinks for itself, apparently. Here we go. So we're going to begin with the right leadership because it all starts at the top, doesn't it? Is it possible you could implement some sort of a system and ask your people to become engaged and do whatever? Let's say it's a cartwheel program, and then really they can smell it on you. You don't really want them doing cartwheels. It's just to keep them busy and pretend that they're engaged, right? I mean, people are not stupid. They are humans. You're human, and you put off a vibe. We've got to look at our own leadership, so we'll talk about that. Then why? Why do we get up in the morning? Share the why before the how. We'll look at that. Open the books and teach the numbers. For those of you in leadership, we did some really neat exercises, didn't we? Bringing the marketplace to our people and doing the dollar exercise and showing them that they have impact every single day. Well, it keeps going, doesn't it? Pardon me. So here we go. Well, you know what? I wrote the book, so I know the steps. The idea is you don't stop this, right? So every year you're going to go back to begin with the right leadership. So, okay, what we've done is we looked at our leadership. We looked at our purpose. We begin to open the books and teach the numbers. And then what do? Well, what's our critical number? What's the one thing that matters most? What's the one thing we're going to focus on for the next 12 months? And then what are the drivers connected to that critical number so that every single person in the organization can feel that line of sight and they feel like they make that difference every day? Then what do you do with the drivers? Well, if that's what affects the critical numbers, why don't we put mini games on the drivers? And then while we're at it, we'll go into stake in the outcome. We'll create that bonus plan, right? The incentive plan that ties everyone back to that critical number. So, oh, we move the number, we get a piece? Huh, pretty cool. Then we need to focus on keeping score. That means building the right scoreboards, then having the right huddles, learning to forward forecast, and finally, how do we keep it up into this annual renewal? That's high involvement planning. So, are you ready to walk through the 10 steps? Are you having fun at all? Okay, because I can have, Howard has agreed to run around the room and high five for the next 60 minutes if that's what it takes. And don't you want to see that? Yeah, baby. So, let's do it. If these are the 10 steps, and this is our process, you already saw that about six times. The first one is begin with the right leadership. Now, this is pretty interesting because I think I've told you enough about me, and those of you who have hung out with me at all know that I have issues, right? I have issues about leadership because I've had a lot of leadership that I would say was not stellar. You know, companies that I worked for were small, family-owned companies, and they learned leadership by building a company by accident. Or maybe those of you who I met last night, I mean, I know you're in here somewhere. We talked about the wood company. They inherited it from their grandfather. So they had not just years of poor leadership training, they actually had generations of bad leadership training, and it wasn't really their fault. They didn't know any different. So this is what we do with leadership. We have a set of beliefs. I'm not going to read these to you. I just want you to hear what I'm talking about. We reflect on ourselves first because we're going to be asking people to, guess what? Think and act like business people? Who wants some extra points? Read a couple of these points for me out loud. Who wants to get some brownie points? Stand up. Oh, Sherry, thank you. That's great. Go ahead. You do the next one. Yes.
Given the opportunity, people want to learn.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe it? If you believe it, let me hear an amen.
Amen.
All right, who wants to do the third one?
Provide education. People can learn business.
Great.
Give it the trust. People will make the right decisions for the business.
Awesome. Oh, I love this. Excellent job. Stand and deliver. Who's going
to
give me the last one?
Ooh,
whoa, wait a minute. What? Stop everything. Did you just say, what did you say?
People should share the reward they help create.
Do you believe that? Okay, interesting. Now, what would happen if you got your leadership team together tomorrow, and then you said, we're going to have a little retreat, we're going to make this happen, Saturday we're off, we're playing golf, we're doing whatever, and then all of a sudden you get through all of them, and then somebody goes, I don't think that's right. What do you think you would do about that? All right. That's pretty bold. I like it. I do like it. You're going to have a come to Jesus meeting, aren't you, about are we aligned as a leadership team? Because if you come out of your meeting and you are not aligned, what is the message to your people? Division, confusion. Do they know what they're doing? So the way that we do the great game of business is we'll first look at characteristics of good leaders. And we think there's four. Because of what we're asking you to do, to basically kind of make yourself vulnerable, you better be vulnerable. I don't have all the answers. I might need to ask you for some help. And then the humility to say, you know what? Maybe my name is Boss. Where's Boss? Boss, Boss. Maybe my name is Boss, but maybe I need some help with this thing. And what about servant leadership? And I've known Mr. Boss just long enough to know, do you think he supports his people with resources, training, help? That is great leadership. Be a servant first, a support to invert the whole pyramid, right? Everybody thinks the CEO is at the top. We believe the CEO is at the bottom, supporting everything else. That's how a tree works. So, courage. Why do you need courage to be a great game company? You take a lot of risk, and in the United States, only 7% of the population has any financial information about the place they work at all. You are much more likely to get a lip fungus from Jessica Alba than to get financial information about the place you work. I know out there, they're laughing their asses off. So, this is what we do. What we say is it isn't just the leadership team. It might be for small business. But what if you created a design team, the people responsible for designing the game in your business and implementing these 10 steps? And so this, and all of these slide shots and everything are in the workbook. They're in the book. All of this information is there. I'm just trying to give you the highlights. Do you see that this is sort of like, if you know EOS, they, of course, they're people analyzer, I think it is, and they look, can they do it? Do they want to do it? Those are great questions. All we're asking is, who is the person you think should be on the design team and why? What is their current position? And then evaluate them 0 to 5 on a few key aspects, right? What is their current financial literacy? You're not beating them up. We actually give them a test. And the reason is, why do you give a DISC test? To understand how to communicate with someone, correct? How to relate with them. Well, if you start talking about radical new financial ratios and bringing all this new information about the business, what if they don't understand the words you're speaking? So we evaluate financial literacy, and then we train to it. We look for the areas of opportunity to grow. Business literacy, because guess what? We might hire someone that knows nothing about our industry. So financial literacy is the financials. Business literacy is the business that we're in. You guys do that every single day. In fact, I've been meeting more and more people who have their own little universities around the business that they're in. And then what about their leadership? Because people can be natural leaders. Other people have to learn it. But why don't you evaluate them? I mean, you're doing a 360 on them for a great game of business, right? And then finally, if you look at the other one, it's buy-in. Do they believe this? Do they really want it? I mean, you're going to need some real strong people in this. And I'm telling you, it isn't always at the top. And yesterday, over in this corner of the room, I think I was telling about a group in Florida, in Fort Myers area, or Punta Gorda, actually. They have a nursery. And we actually went out into the organization because most of the folks that work there, English is a second language. And so you've got this small pot of people at the top running the business, but the operations are all speaking Spanish. And we're like going, dude, I don't speak Spanish. I barely speak English, as you can tell. And I go, we need some help. And we identified Dahlia, a young lady who worked in the nursery, very young, but really cool. She had two things I needed, and that was, number one, the respect of her coworkers. They really liked Dahlia. She was an influencer. She was really positive, and she was bilingual. We added her to the design team. Now she's hanging out with the CEO, the CFO. I'm talking about the big wigs of the company and treated with respect. Today she actually manages one of the nurseries. Because we lifted someone up and gave them a chance, and she's a stellar player. So when you create your design team, you're really creating the folks who will help you implement the game. Does it make sense? Great. So I want to tell you, normally when you say begin with the right leadership, everybody goes, it's values, it's vision, it's mission. I totally agree, but you got to be careful. I don't know if you know this, but this building housed one of the people that had some of the greatest values ever. And as I show you these, somebody shout it out if you know the company. Beautiful place, right? Respect, integrity. Yeah, that's right. Having values and living values, two different things. Pretty crazy, right? I actually, when I do this in Springfield, when people come from all over the world to do the Get in the Game workshop, I actually have a copy of the Enron Code of Ethics. It's that thick. And when someone guesses it, I throw it on the table. It's theirs to keep. No one has taken it yet. And it's signed by Ken Lay. It's not a signed copy, I mean, but the PDF had his signature. I'm like, is that crazy? So saying and doing, two different things. You following me? All right. So step two, we've looked at the leadership. We're evaluating ourselves and each other, and we're also building a design team. Step two is the why before the how. Now, this step is important because people behave differently when they understand why you get out of bed. They behave differently when they understand why they're getting out of bed. When there is a purpose to live for, isn't it a different conversation? Now, what I ask people to do as we coach people through this is actually get in touch with two whys. Why are we in business? Why do we exist? But two is, why are you here? If people cannot connect why they get up in the morning, if they're a supervisor, if they're CEO, if they are someone driving a truck, I don't care. I want to know, are they really connected to our business the way we are? Because we're about to reveal some stuff, right? We're about to show them how hard it is to make money. And when we do, a lot of people, you know what happened years ago in the 90s? Outback Steakhouse, Chris Sullivan, when he first started, he goes, man, here's the deal. And he got all of his cooks and his people together. The whole thing was going to be, I want to show you how this works. I want to, you know, teach you about the business. I want to hold one another accountable, try to drive performance, and then I'll give you a piece of the action, right? Education, accountability, incentives. Great game of business, 101. He gets his people together and he goes, this is it. And he goes through the income statement and at the bottom is 3 cents. And the head cook goes, are you kidding me? In 1 week, they doubled profitability. They didn't do anything except exposure. It was awareness that, wow, Chris is really working hard. We're really working hard. But then again, I'm just thinking, maybe that steak didn't hit the floor. Maybe that steak didn't go home. Maybe that steak, they said, hey, man, we can, as Howard would say, plus it up. Who can come up with something that costs nothing and charge $18 for it? Ever hear of a bloomin' onion? Right? So, teaching people about this, it takes that idea of why. Why are we doing this? Why did Chris Sullivan want to build Outback Steakhouse? Because he and his buddies wanted to start a restaurant so they could golf in the morning and only serve dinner at first. Then they took it to lunch. But they didn't want to be tied up in the morning. They wanted to play golf. Isn't that cool? Pretty good why, if you're a golfer. So, first of all, you got to have this awareness of a need for a change, the desire to participate in it, the knowledge and the skills to make it happen, and the reinforcement to make it stick. Now, here's what I would suggest. I've heard Simon Sinek mentioned several times. Start with why. A great way to start is go watch his TED Talk. I will also tell you that if you really want to go back to the source material, read Viktor Frankl's book, For Meaning. If you don't know it, you need to read it. If you read it before, you need to read it again. I read it in college. Did you see the air quotes? Because I was really on a ski trip. So what I'm trying to say is, as a maturing adult, read it again a few years ago, and I'm going, oh my gosh, the first words in the book are, all of life is suffering. Steve's the worst public speaker ever. Why would he suggest a book like that? But the whole thing is, it's finding meaning in the suffering. Is life hard? Is life fair? Somebody told me at the last gig I did, they said, fair is for wussies. And I was like, wow, what is getting old for? Because it must be really rough. So here's the thing. When you think about it, you go, here's a guy who survived Auschwitz, Dachau. He was tortured. All of his family and friends were murdered. And he still figured out one thing. He said he saw people in the concentration camps dying, surviving, but he saw a third set of people. They were thriving. Not like cartwheels, again, not doves and rainbows, but we're saying they had a purpose beyond the wire. So when you read Man's Search for Meaning, what you actually discover is there is a way, ladies and gentlemen, to have one thing no one can ever take away from you, and that's what he called the last of the human freedoms. The one thing that no one can ever take away is your choice of how you respond to any given set of circumstances. So, why before the how? Get in touch with your why. That's the way we begin this thing. Look at the leadership. Ask about your own personal why as well as the organizational why. Now, the next step, of course, is what we talked about yesterday. I gave you a lot of good examples about how to begin to open the books and teach the numbers. Remember, education is vital along with transparency. Don't do one without the other. Well, no, you could educate, but why would you do that and then not be transparent? It doesn't make sense. That's probably another workshop. But here's what I want to do. Remember this, those of you in leadership, the idea of bringing the marketplace to your people, that's the first step, is how hard is it to make money? They won't believe how hard it is to make money. The next one was, remember this one, the dollar exercise. We touched on it yesterday as well. The idea of every dollar we save is actually worth a multiple in sales. So let me do this. I don't care where you start. I don't care if you do for formal financial literacy training or whether you just begin to have huddles, because guess what? They're going to learn it both ways. But as Voltaire said, the perfect is the enemy of the good. Let's do a Howard on this thing. Let's Howard Partridge this mofo up right now. What if Voltaire would have said, the perfect is the enemy of the implemented? Do something. That's all I'm suggesting. So, I want to share one other way that you can do this. A friend of mine in St. Louis, Missouri, Jeff Evenson. I don't know if you've ever run across him. He used to work for Anheuser-Busch. Then he and his wife started spas and salons and this sort of thing, right? And as he was teaching, imagine colorists, hairstylists, massage therapists, all these people that have been running from numbers their whole life, he teaches them how business works, and they start to see incredible results. Now, flash forward a little bit, he's going, why don't we do this at home? And he sends me a text one day, and this is it. It's $14,000 in $1 bills, and one of his kids. This is Sydney. Now, today, she just graduated. She's an engineer in Little Rock, Arkansas, for a firm. She's awesome. But now, she's got a soccer team, or a dance class, or whatever. We're going to show you that in a minute, right? But this is the text he sent. go, Jeff, you've got to get a hold of me immediately. I don't know what's going on here. Are you selling cocaine? By the grain. Because it's all in ones, you know. Or, if you know St. Louis, I'm like, are you going to East St. Louis later? You can only guess what's across the river. Okay. So what's the point? He calls me up. He goes, hey, I got more for you. Look at this. We made up a whiteboard. All of the categories of expenses in our household. By the way, $14,000 was their gross family income for the month. Gross. Here's the whiteboard. Each category is there. Each post-it is there for each specific expense. And under each post-it was the amount. What do you think he made his kids do? Count the money out. Check this out. Now, I don't know if you can see these, but let me read some of these for you. So you can see, you can imagine the big stacks, can't you? Private school tuition. Let me go back a little bit here. Here we go. Private school tuition. We've got the car loans, we've got the home mortgage, we've got taxes, we've got charity, we've got, oh, guess what? Look at these. There's the home mortgage. Zoom in on, there's the giving, Social Security, college funds, cell phones. That's a big stack. But my favorite one is right here. I'm not sure if we'll be able to go backwards on this or not. Christian, help me out just a couple of slides, will you? There we go. That's perfect. If we go back right to here. So here's the conversation. It wasn't, why is the government taking so much of our money? Right? Because the kids are little. And it wasn't, oh my gosh, I can't believe what our cell phones cost. It was right over here on the left-hand middle side, Sydney's dance class, Jeffrey's club soccer, and let's see. And then we've got another club volleyball over here. Why is Susie's stack bigger than mine? Do you love us less than Susie? Telling you, you would not believe what people have done at their businesses when they first roll this thing out. Some do a big income statement. Some people do a big dump of fake money. At Kirby Lane, because I told you about them yesterday, I got to participate in this multiple times. They actually made a line of people. So each rollout, we'd have 100, 150 people in the room, and they'd line up about 20 people, and each one would get a name tag, a big placard over their neck, right? And when we'd say, this is the Ben E. Keith Food Company, and this is a vendor, and this is a supplier, right? And everyone's going, oh, here's accounting, here's HR. In other words, an income statement of humanity. At the end was Mason Ayer, the son of the founders, current CEO and owner of the business, with his hands out. And so they took a big stack of fake, big dollar bills, and they did this same thing, except I got to keep my stack, they got to keep their stack, and by the end, here's like a buck. You getting it? Isn't that powerful? So everyone in the room is going, really? They can see Mason isn't taking the big stack home. So there's lots of creative ways. Don't stop being creative. Be you. But use these as inspiration. So opening the books can be formal, and it can be fun, and it can be crazy and inventive. You just have to give it a shot. So is this helpful?
Yeah.
Awesome. By the way, what I didn't know is Jeff had to order these $1 bills 2 weeks ahead of time. And then he had to fill out forms to put it back in his bank. So it's like, you're going to have to plan ahead. Just be ready for that. Now, our step number four is focus on the critical number. And we got a lot of conversations going yesterday about this one. The critical number is one thing. When they hear Jack Stack speak out there in the world, he talks about the critical number of the business. They're going, oh, this sounds good. How many of you ever heard of Vern Harnish or Scaling Up, Gazelles? Anybody? A couple of you? So if you look at Vern's stuff, Jack mentored Vern many years ago, right? And so at the center of his one-page plan is the critical number. And huddles, right? This has been the source of a lot of things. How about EOS? EOS? Geno Wickman worked for Vern. You see the connection here? So these are all great practices. So it's about weaving them together into the best system you can create for your organization. The critical number, though, is a misnomer because it sounds like the magic number. Like, if you will tell me my critical number, all of my problems will be solved. That is not the guarantee, my friends. This is life, and we established a moment ago it wasn't fair and it wasn't easy. The critical number just gives us two things, permission to focus and permission to win. In the whirlwind of activities that we have every single day in our organizations, isn't it tough to really stick to the basics and say these are the things we need to do, the basic blocking and tackling of our business? Doesn't it sometimes feel that way? This is the interactive part of the workshop, by the way. So, yeah, I mean, it's tough, I'm telling you. And I know, too, I mean, I've been doing this a long time, but I know it's hard because, you know, as soon as one thing happens, another fire starts up. In fact, one thing I would tell you is if you feel like a firefighter in your business, who's always putting out fires? Just show me hands. You need to find out who your arsonist is. It's probably inside. And it's probably you. That's exactly right. That is self-awareness. Because, my friends, the bottleneck is usually at the top of the bottle. You heard that. So the critical number, what I'm trying to tell you, is it does give you permission to really focus your organization's energies and resources on one thing. The funny thing is then people overthink it. And this is what happens. I was doing a workshop. This is at least 7-8 years ago. And unbeknownst to me, one of the participants was a professor of strategy. I didn't know there was such a thing. And he was also some sort of numbers guru. I don't know if he was an economics professor or a math guy or whatever. But he finally interrupted me as I was teaching. How rude. No, I'm kidding. And he stood up, which I thought was bold. You know, he had a question. He didn't have a question. He had a statement to make. He said, "Steve, I just want to let you know my name is Professor," right, because it's protect the innocent. I said, "Well, doctor, what is it that you'd like to share with us?" He said, "I can tell this group the ultimate critical number for any business." And I said, I was like, holy crap, this is going to be great. Because I'd like to know what that is. I'm just that guy. I would like to know the answer before I go through the process. Just me, my personality. So I'm like going, go for it. So he turns around, patches on his sleeves. No kidding. It was such a great stereotype. And he gets up and he professes to the group. He says, it is EVA, ladies and gentlemen, EVA, economic value added. And I'm going, why did I study art? Because I have no idea what he's talking about. Sounds really good, though. And I said, well, doctor, please explain it, because obviously everyone was like this. They're like, what is that? I haven't even heard my accountant talk about economic value added. And he proceeded to come to the front of the room and start to teach it. And as he did, what I realized was there is ultimately, in business, there's a few numbers that you could say are ultimate critical numbers, because economic value added means we added economic value to the organization over a period of time. And if you could measure that, you could measure the whole business in one shot. Bam. What is the problem with EVA? So I asked that of the group after he sat down, because I wasn't attacking him. I was attacking the idea of one ultimate critical number, period, ipso facto. It's over time. What time period, right? And the other thing was, everyone was dumbstruck. So imagine if you roll this out to people cleaning carpets, driving catering trucks, washing windows, writing code. It doesn't matter, because what you've done is you've divorced them completely from the daily activities of the business again. You've given them one more KPI that sounds great when you're up there pontificating. So what I'm telling you is the critical number is really what measures winning. What defines winning for the next year, not for all time? Yes, I want you to look at EVA if you are so inclined. What I really want you to do is figure out the measures you want to know, which are probably big things like how are our revenues trending over a 12-month period, year over year? And what's our 3-year trend? What's our 5-year trend? What's our forecast for 3 years? Those are the things I want to know. And what about margin then? Are margins solid? Compare yourself to the marketplace, blah, blah, blah. You getting it? So the idea is, how can we make the critical number one thing we can all believe into and buy into so that we can execute on it? Because then I'm going to ask you to find drivers to the critical number. Show me a driver to EVA and it will give you a dollar. Show me a driver to a critical number that will move the number in the next 90 days. I'll give you $100. Because now you got people engaged. Now you got people connected with line of sight. So let's talk about what that critical number looks like. Remember when we did North yesterday? Everybody, straight arm, point north for me. Look around the room. Is this powerful? Thank you. I almost caught you stretching, but you did it, baby. You went there. Isn't that powerful, though? I mean, what if you just said this is what we're headed toward, and what if that number was something they could learn in a short period of time? Look, in the beginning, I'm going to tell you a secret. You will always have a profitability number of some sort. I've heard the word EBITDA a number of times. Alan said it a number of times because he knows that valuators, business valuators, take EBITDA and give it a multiple based on your industry. So whatever your earnings are, that's what they're looking at. But what if you want to do something else? At SRC, we use a lot of PBT, profit before tax. You could use net profit. I use that all the time in examples and illustrations that I use. Whatever your bottom line is, you will probably watch that as a critical number each year as a portion of this thing. I'm just telling you, it funds everything, doesn't it? But when you get good at it, so for your first year, use some sort of profitability number. The second year, if you're really good, we're really watching this. We're good at making money now, because you will be. Now you're going to look for a strategic number, 89 to 1 debt to equity. Now that was screaming at Jack, wasn't it? Making a profit was important, but we needed to make the bank loan payment. Is something screaming at you in the middle of the night? It's probably your critical number. And if it's keeping you up, why isn't it keeping everybody at your company up too? Are you guys ready to do that to your people? It's a question. I don't have the answer. You got to think about that, because that's a lot of weight to put on people. And if I tell people and it's this bad, will they run for the hills? They might. But they might stick. They might actually ask what I think. They might ask is, holy crap, I didn't know. I had no idea. What can I do to help? What do you think your people would do? I'm curious. Yeah. Well, I believe that, Sherry Perry. Anybody else? I'm curious. What do you think your people would do? If the numbers were rough, think they'd pitch in?
Yeah.
Now, it's not with that. You're not going to just dump it on them. I haven't paid myself in 6 months. Don't say that. Please don't say that. I had a boss tell me that once when I was going in to ask for a raise, and that was his answer. What did I hear? You suck. And I'm telling you a big fat lie. He wasn't, but that's what it sounded like to me, because he was deflecting my request. Of course, I was ignorant. I didn't know any better. Do you see my point? Remember your audience and remember how you're coming across. This isn't about you. It's about building a great company. It helps that you come along with it. So when you find that one thing, you must be asking, well, wait a minute, Steve. When we find it, how do we find it? Well, as we go through this, these are small, they're tiny, don't worry about it, they're in the book as well. But the idea is that critical numbers can evolve over time. And the example that we show here is on the right-hand side, ReGen Technologies, our first joint venture with John Deere. I'll just walk you through really briefly. The idea was at first it was earnings, because we're 50-50 partners with John Deere. They want earnings. We want earnings, so make money. Well, as you see it evolve, then it was earnings plus a return on assets. We had a huge capital expenditure in the building, the machines, right? All of the technology we needed. So we want to make sure the ROA is really good on the stuff we invested in. Well, the third year, look at what happened. Now it's sales per employee. The best part of this whole story, I could go through all of them, but net promoter score. Who knows what net promoter is? If you don't, go to Taco Bell. Or anywhere else where they give you the receipt that, like, you don't have. By the way, that's the answer to the toilet paper crisis, is just go to Taco Bell. Wait, that could be the cause of it. But the receipts they give you, and they're like, if you do the thing at the bottom, right? 0 to 10 comes out of Harvard, Fred Reichheld's book, The Ultimate Question. If you don't know it, go check it out. It's a great way to ask a question. Would you, 0 to 10, please give us a rating on, would you recommend us enthusiastically to a friend or colleague? If it's a 9 or 10, they're a promoter. 0 to 6, they are a detractor. 7s and 8s are passive. So you throw out the 7s and 8s, then you smash the two together, you get a ratio, basically a percentage, and you say, I have a 75% net promoter score, and then you go on their website and look and say, in our industry, carpet cleaners, and I'm sorry, I just have heard a lot of carpet cleaning stuff, and I saw the carpet cleaning facility of Howard's, you know, so I've got it in my head. Carpet cleaners should have this NPS if they're outstanding. Sherry, on your videos that we shared with the leadership group, somebody said 99% of our customers love us. It's the 1% we're after, right? So you're trying to identify, because I could say that too, people who play the great game of business love us. How do I know? And that's what you should ask every single person that works for you. Do we measure it? Why would an engine company have net promoter score? That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Here's the deal. See, right above it, on-time delivery, they prided themselves on the fact that a John Deere dealer could call up Regen Technologies, who remanufactured John Deere engines, and in 24 hours, a specialized, customized John Deere engine specifically made and manufactured for their needs would go out in 24 hours. Boom. It was amazing. And they maxed bonus that year every quarter because they were doing it. They were getting them out the door in 24 hours. Amazing. Nobody does that. Here's the problem. What they found out was as they made their NPS calls the next year, they're going, this needs to be a critical number, because what happened is those engines would go to a John Deere PDC. It's a distribution center, and sit for 2 weeks. So we had to invest, the joint venture had to invest in our own warehouses across the country so that we could get them right to where they needed to be as quickly as possible. Is that critical to the business? Can you make the best engines in the world and still lose customers? Absolutely. So the idea of it is critical number can evolve with your business. The way Jack thinks about it, this may help you, is what's in our way of building a great company? What's the weakness that could take us out? Do you have one big customer? Your critical number is diversification. Got it? Is your cash flow a mess? Get on it. Teach your people what is keeping you up at night. And one of the ways that we do this, remember our line of sight drawing that we did yesterday, this illustration of people understanding that everything they do matters to that critical number? What I want to do is ask you this. What's the number one predictor of an achievable and meaningful and impactful critical number? What's the number one predictor you're going to be successful? Engagement. I'll take that. Measurables, yes. Buy-in. Who said buy-in? Can we have a little round of applause for this young lady? Absolutely. Thank you. High five. Now, Mr. Boss, you were right. Engagement, measures, yes, 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 yes. But the whole thing is, what Jack actually has taught us through the years is that it isn't even the number. It's the process of getting to the critical number that actually gets you the buy-in. The process is more important than the number itself. Because if people are involved, they commit, right? Remember, commit, execute. So I'm going to show you an example of what this means. So we look at one of the tools that we give you in the book is the line of sight tool. How do we get there? And we gather data like crazy, and we look at four different lenses when we look at the business. One is the financial. What is the marketplace like? What are the economic realities of the economy? What is happening in our own business, right? What are the issues that pop up? And what are our opportunities? And then, when you go to the next one, marketplace. What's happening with our competitors? What's happening in our sandbox? Who else is here? And what's the barrier to entry? All the questions you would ask if you were going to buy a business. Financial, marketplace, now what? Operations. What are the big issues in our operations? Who do we need? What technology do we lack? Do we need trucks? Do we not need trucks? And finally, people. What's going on with our people? Do they need training? Do we have holes in our machine, so to speak? Right now, everybody's got people issues. So guess what's going to come up there? Retention, maybe recruitment. So after you start to collect these things, I brought one just to show you. I don't want you to get hung up on it. This is actually what can happen. Imagine giving everybody 5 Post-it notes, and this would be your design team at first. I'm not saying go out to all your people. Right now they haven't even seen an income statement, right? But what if you got your design team together and gave everybody 5 Post-it notes for each of those categories, and you stuck them up on the wall and arranged them and everything? I'm telling you, the things will emerge. The issues will emerge. And then you take the highest-ranked items from those Post-its, you slap them on a flip chart like that, and isn't this a great way to have a conversation, an adult conversation about the realities of the business? Financial, marketplace, operations, people. And we call it the line of sight tool because FMOP doesn't sound sexy. F-M-O-P? Very tough room. So what we're going to do is we're going to take these and we're going to say, out of all of these, which one will move the most other numbers, most other issues, right? If we got a serious people issue, it could be critical. But how can we watch profitability and the people issue, right, in your business? So what we're trying to do is it's the process of getting a critical number that is actually more involved and important than the actual measure itself. Does that make sense? Awesome. So when we go from there, we say, well, we've gotten our people involved. We've got our design team working on this thing. We're coming up with a critical number. We've gotten some advice that a profitability number is probably a good place to start. Then looking for a strategic number as time goes along. But here's the thing. If you have something that's keeping you up and you go through this process, is it possible that part of the process is you sharing the realities of the business with your people in a way that they can consume it? Is it? Do you think they could learn something about dealing with the banks or dealing with a customer or collections or, I mean, right? All that stuff is going to come out because different people in the design team represent different parts of the business. And so if somebody's like, I've been saying this for years, they finally get their day. Hooray, here's a post-it note. But it gets out there. And then we can say, well, explain this to me. Because when you go up to a wall full of post-it notes, what's cool is you start to see patterns emerge. You go, now let's arrange them, right? If this sounds similar to that, and we're going to put these over here, blah, 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 blah. Pretty soon somebody's going to go, I don't understand what this means. And now everybody hears the explanation together. And if they still don't get it, it's a small enough group where you can actually delve into it and feel like you get to the right issues of the business. So when we get our critical number, the cool thing is you'll be like jubilant. It's like, yeah, we got it. Well, now what? Well, we want drivers. Act on the right drivers. What are the things that will move the critical number in the right direction? And what I want is really tactical things. If the critical number is strategic, I want a tactical approach to getting it done. What are the measures of success as we go through these? Rather than read you this, what I want to do is say, if critical number is the what we're trying to achieve, the drivers are the how. Now, you've heard this in any good goal-setting course, lead measures, lag measures. Why not have a little bit of both? What are the ones that you need to watch for? Unfortunately, what most people do is say, I want to weigh X by bikini season. I like that there were two people that chuckled. The rest are going, that is a horrible picture, Steve. Don't go there. No, but the thing is, it's like the end goal is there. But I think what you learn from Howard and all the speakers here, it's the process, isn't it? So how do we say, I want to set a goal, but it's also, how can we move the number? That is what I think a driver is saying, what's the lead measure? If I want to lose weight, as an example, what are the different ways I can lose weight on a lead side? What are the lead measures of losing weight? Exercise, I can burn more calories. Eating healthy. Drinking water. Sleeping. See, you guys know this stuff. Don't you think your people will probably know a lot of stuff when we break it down and say, how do we get there to more profit, let's say? So there are ways that you go about this. My biggest problem with weight loss is I can't keep my freaking mouth shut. Stuff keeps going in there and I keep eating it. So what do we do? Isn't it possible our business is similar? We go, wait a minute, let's look at the realities of this thing and don't pull any punches. Get it all out on the table and say, what are the lead measures? I also want the lag measures because they lead to lead measures, right? If somebody says, this is what we got to watch for, rework, awesome. We talked about rework mini games, right? That's a huge driver to profitability. But that is a lag measure, isn't it? So what we want to do is what causes rework and all of the systemic root causes of rework, that's what we want to go after. Wouldn't those be great drivers to a critical number?
Yeah.
Under the category of rework. Because we all have it, we just don't like to face it. So if indeed, and I'm going to give you permission to expand your thinking, if the critical number is in the middle of the big game and we're going to teach, hold one another accountable, and provide incentives around it, a driver moves the critical number. Well, isn't that sort of like a departmental critical number? And doesn't a department have potentially teams, right? As you go down the line, you could say these are all sort of little critical numbers all the way down to the individual. You're still creating that line of sight. It's the same idea. I'm just giving you permission to go, oh, it's the one thing. We got to do all the jobs. We got to do all the things to make business successful. But the one thing that we do first and most often is make sure we're moving our critical number. And that line of sight to the big critical number is really important. So I did a little illustration here for you. Individual, team, work group, department. You see the alignment you can get? I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying it'll happen in 5 minutes, but when you go to the trouble, it is powerful. So there are lots of ways to do it. These are some of the things we use in the book. This is something you can do with an Excel spreadsheet or a piece of paper. At the top, this is from SRC Electrical in 2009. 2009 OEMs, original equipment manufacturers like John Deere, Case New Holland, Caterpillar, all these big companies, guess what they did? They turned the order valve off. Nobody's buying anything. So the big learn here is SRC Electrical, who remanufactures rotating electrical products like alternators and generators and that sort of thing, they said, we need to get the best return on assets, or ROA, we possibly can, because we have a building, we have people, we've got machines, and we've got stock, or what we call core. We got to get the best ROA. And so they went to their different groups here. And again, I know it's small, so don't try to read it all, but the idea is, what can sales do? What can production do? What can engineering do? What can materials? And this goes on, right? Every department. And they simply asked one question. How do you connect with ROA? And everybody had to come up with at least two drivers and what those measures looked like. And the big story out of this picture is not the picture itself. The story is the story behind the stories. That sounded multi-layered. Steve, break it down. Here's the thing. If you go to salespeople and you go, hey, we've got to get the biggest ROA out of this business as possible. What are two drivers for you? And they come back to you and they say, sell what we have in stock and get higher margins. What have you been saying to sales their whole lives? Sell what we've got and, oh my God, get higher margins. The thing is, in 2009, there was a bit more attention paid to, oh yeah, no one's taking my calls. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's doing business. It's crazy. So what they did is the sales group actually took the entire database and sorted it by gross margin. And they started to say, you know what? Our biggest customer is not the one we make money on. And they really identified. So the whole idea behind this is not the tool. The idea is the conversations that you have. So literally, we had the salespeople coming up with ideas. We had, on the far side, you see materials. Of course, their job is to make better buys anyway. The big operating acronym for them is PPV, Purchase Price Variance. I thought it was a human virus. Okay, a little bit of response. PPV, I'm going, that's what they talk about all the time. Purchase price, in other words, I got a better deal. So the standard is here, I got it for less. These guys, this is where people start to get strategic. They go, wait a minute, if I go to my suppliers, nobody's buying parts from them, right? Because nobody's buying anything from us, right? That's the way it works, it's trickle down, and these guys are dying for business. And so our guys said, we do have some business coming through. I'll tell you what, you drop your price to X and hold it for 3 years, give me a guarantee, and I'll buy all my parts from you in this category. They made deals with people like Herb Kelleher did at Southwest with the unions way back when. He went to all five unions and he said, hey, give us a deal. Let's lock in our contract for more years, for 5 years. And he beat all the other airlines because they were still going every 3 years, right? And he said, here's what we'll do. Instead of more money, we'll give you stock in the company, because guess what's going to happen to our stock price when everybody else is raising their rates? And, of course, they've been the most profitable airline. I know they're having their own labor issues now, but aren't we all? So the idea is their three-year contracts were awesome, because what happened in 2010 and 2011? All of our competitors were paying premiums for parts while we got them at fire sale prices. So it's about unleashing the entrepreneur inside every one of our people. It's cutting them loose and saying, what would you do differently? Now, a recession helps. But what is some other way that you can do this to get some line item ownership, to get some real thinking about this? And I brought one more illustration for you. This came from a company out west that makes rescue equipment. They happen to be employee-owned. Don't get hung up on that. But this is such a cool illustration that's different than an Excel spreadsheet or a tool or something like that. So what they said is, what is my contribution? How does my contribution affect my company's performance? And so if you follow the arrows, it goes into this, my individual performance affects my department, my company, ESOP value, my share value, and back to me. You see the circle? That's the virtuous circle, if you will. If I can drive value in the what I do every day, the company will be worth more and I'll get it. Now, if you're not employee-owned, all I say is, well, what if you put bonus plan in there? See what I'm saying? There's the stake in the outcome. This just happens to be one company's approach. See the big blank? The idea was, what do I do every day that I could do differently to change the performance of my department? Look at what this guy did. This is Jose Cruz, a planner scheduler. And look at what he wrote down. Improve on-time deliveries. Kind of sounds like his job. But it's a long list that he needs to fill out, right? So he goes, well, making the right product at the right time. Well, that makes sense. Also his job, but let's keep going. Identifying late orders to notify customers on delivery. Okay, all of a sudden what he's doing is he's outlining his commitments to his fellow workers. What he's going to do every day differently to drive performance and value in the business every single day. We're going to build a great company. Are you getting it? Check this out. They put him on the wall. There are no more arguments about what is happening at CMC Rescue. They don't go to Jose and say, you're not doing your job, blah, 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 because he knows what his job is. He wrote it down. Is that cool? So line of sight, line item ownership. These are big things about executing in the great game of business. Is this helpful? Awesome. So in step six, we've got mini games. So you've identified the critical number. You've found drivers by asking your people and coaching them through this, right? Now we can identify some things that are really big. We need to eat fewer calories, or we need to exercise more, right? Business speak. What do we need to do? Maybe we need to watch our expenses, but instead of the boss going, I can't believe you did that again. Why did you make that? Blah, 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 blah. Instead, we're going, hey, what do you think we should do? And then you're the coach. You're the resource. So mini games, and we went through this in the leadership group. In a nutshell, I showed you guys some pretty good examples, I think. I want to show you another example of this. What they are is they're short-term versions of the great game of business. 90 days or less. What can you do? If you identify a driver, can you go after it for a quarter, 6 weeks to 90 days and say, we are going to put a full court press on this one driver in this department and it's going to get better? And Sherry came up and told the story of how they started to look for, in all their departments, potential ways to drive more profitability. And my favorite example was when, and I don't remember her name, help me out, the person, the UPS person. Hope. Oh, I thought you were like, I was hoping you would tell me. So Hope says, hey, we ship hundreds of packages a week through UPS, and so we're looking for ways to save. Now remember, they've been in business for years and years and years. Hope says, 25 years. Remember that. She says, oh, on the UPS shipping site, there are some links that you can click, and they give you different rates for different purposes. And that's when it shows, we're saving hundreds of dollars a week because we click a link. One more click got us a savings that we've looked at for years. Now, the beauty of it is they found it. It wasn't the boss going, I can't believe you shipped it on the expensive side. You know, that's not Sherry's style, as far as I know. So the big idea is she might ROV them to death, but I don't think she beats them over the head. Here's what you're looking at. You play mini games to affect a change in a system, a process, or a behavior. Something that will stick long after the mini game is over. It's not an incentive plan to go, woohoo, we're having fun. And then in a few weeks, people are like, this is boring. What's next? When are they going to stop paying attention to it? They build them, you coach them, and they execute them. You reinforce the business education because you're learning something new about the business. I had no idea UPS had different things. What else do they have? Does FedEx have a program like that? How do we do different things? By thinking differently, like business people. You're building teamwork because the win, the incentive, is team-based. And it's totally self-funded. So the whole idea is the level of the rewards are determined by their performance. The rewards themselves are chosen by the people people support what they help create. What do you want? You want a t-shirt? You want to go out to eat? You want to go snowmobiling? Whatever it is, they will love it because people support what they help create. And finally, creating a culture of winning. And this is where I'm going to pause for a minute and just say, can I recognize that everybody here has been so vulnerable and talking about their journey? I know that all of you, right underneath your smiling, shiny partridge faces, you got some stuff going on. Am I right? Right back here? And everybody at home that's crying, I'm with you. I see you. I feel you. The thing is, we all do, right? Looking at your people, isn't it possible that they may not be winning in life right now? It's tough out there. It really is. And it's going to get tougher. That's life. But is it possible we could create one place, a culture of ownership and a culture of winning, where when you come to work, we win here? At SRC, I will tell you, Jack will not lose. So we're playing to win every single day. And when I go to work, I do feel energized by that, knowing that not just my division, but all the divisions are out there just scrapping. They're making it happen. They're doing it. It feels good. And if you can have people win more at work, they tend to win more at home. And when they win better at home, I think they do better in the community. So I want you to tie this back to, it's not just about playing games or teaching people business. It's about teaching people to be better people. Alan talked about that too. I was moved by that because I think that's what we're doing here today, is we're trying to help people achieve their next best self. That's a pretty big deal, guys, because that's not what most business conferences are about. It's about how do I get a higher valuation, sell out, and buy an island. Which sounds okay, but I still have to live with myself. And I choose this. So if mini games are doing all this stuff, I just wanted to share one with you from Texas. So I work right here in Houston. There's a building right downtown where Macy's used to stand. Who's from Houston? Anybody? You remember where Macy's was? Jeff Hildebrand blew it up. He bought it, he blew it up, and he put his building there. He started about the same time Jack did. He implemented the great game of business. It's Hillcorp Energy. They are the largest independent energy producer, and I mean oil and gas, in the United States. And I think that's amazing. He's a billionaire now. I mean, I've got lots of stories, but here's the thing. For years, I've been working with him, going around as they grow by acquisition. Because when Exxon and Mobil and BP, we were talking about it at breakfast, right? When they, when the Wall Street says, well, you're kind of flattening out here, they go, oh, we got to find some new stuff. So they sell it to someone like Jeff. And Jeff's people go in with better technology, better people, better work ethic, and they take what was going to be left in the ground. They exploit unused resources that were going to be there anyway. You following me? And I love his mission statement, and he's probably got someone on me, right? Do you see a red dot on my chest? No, I'm kidding. I'm going to screw it up. No, he's such a cool guy. I mean, it's fulfilling America's energy needs with American oil and gas. So it's all here. It's about here. It's about us. It is awesome. And now he's the largest. He bought BP out of the North Slope of Alaska recently. I mean, I'm just telling you, it's pretty awesome. But here's the deal. They hire us to go in and train all these new people. If you worked for Marathon, you probably saw me in Alaska. If you worked for BP, you will see me in Alaska. Are you following me? And you might work for Hillcorp or Harvest Pipeline, and you saw me in Jenneret, Louisiana. I don't know what the hell I was doing there except teaching. And that's what we were doing. So I find myself in Zapata, Texas. Anybody from Zapata? I'm just checking because I did this at HEB once, and the guy came up afterward and he said, not only am I from Zapata, my name is Zapata. And when I tell the story, I think you'll understand why he was slightly upset with me. So Zapata is way down on the border. It's right there, and it is very hot and very dry, and that's where the dry gas wells are. It's a great place for Hillcorp to extract natural gas for America. The thing is, it's a pretty rough part of Texas in the sense that they told me, can you see the picture I took? That's my hotel, the Holiday Inn Express, where normally you wake up feeling smarter, they say. I was going, I'm still in Zapata. It is. There's not much there. There was a Dollar General across the street and a Dairy Queen. I'm not judging anybody there. I'm just saying it's a tough part of town because Hillcorp said, do not leave the hotel. As you can see, every other car in the parking lot, other than my rental, is a police car, state patrolman, border patrol, DEA. It's the only place to stay, basically. My point of the story is this. It's the superhighway of drugs and people. Don't leave the hotel at night. Don't travel alone. Go with a Hill Court person. So just think about what it would be like to work there or live there. You didn't ask for all this. Apparently, at one time, there was a championship bass lake there that is now dry. I mean, everything is just against poor Zapata. So there's not much there. I'm training. In fact, I went there three different times. But my favorite story is this. So you've got people that work for Hill Corp make a lot of money. They are well taken care of. First of all, they have great salaries and benefits. Secondly, their five-year average on their quarterly bonus, 36% of their salary. I'm sure some of my Houston people are like, I'm seeing if they got any openings. They do. And every 5 years, they have a big, hairy, audacious goal bonus. The last one was $100,000, taxes paid to every individual in the company. The whole thing is, help me double the value of my business every 5 years, and I will pay that, right? While you make hundreds of thousands and total hundreds of millions, what does Jeff get? Billions. It's pretty cool, right? Because his billionaire friends do not do this. So what I'm saying is, if you're already well compensated and you're currently working in Zapata at the dry gas wells, the first thing is you are being told every single day, produce, 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 right? Increase production, increase value, increase proved reserves. So I'm in the back of a Mexican restaurant because that was our meeting room. I'm dressed like this. Why was I dressed like this when it's a million degrees? I don't know. But I just want you to be there with me. My feet, as I would turn, I could feel the crunch of the sand on the floor. Are you getting the picture now? And we're having it, and I'm like, hey, let's play mini games, doing my thing. And I'm going to have a problem because no one's sitting down. Everyone's on the back and the sides of the room like this. And by the way, I don't know if I told you, they're big guys, really big, really big. You know, I forgot your name. Mike, hold up your hands. Look at this guy's hands. He is a monster. This is what it felt like when you shook their hands. Mike shook my hand this morning, and I was like, I submit all of my financial means to you. I mean, it's just big guys, because they work out in the field, right? They are there checking and working and, you know, putting new pipe in, and they're fixing things. You know what I'm saying? They're running the operation. The beautiful part about this story is this. I'm trying to break through, and I'm going, how can I do this? Because I'm not, like, good at manipulating someone. You know, I'm like, I'm me. That's just the way it is. And I'm going, how can I break through? And finally, I'm like going, what do you think you could do differently than you're doing right now? And one of them finally goes, we'll do ours on production. They knew they had to do a mini game. That was the edict from on high, is we're doing this training, you better do something with it. We'll increase production by 10%. I'm like, no, dude, don't do that. Don't do it because you have to. What I want to know is what increases production, because your job is to increase production. I want to know, well, that's something that could be interesting to do. Well, the fun part about this is, I didn't mention to you, is they're in fire retardant clothing, right? It's 100 million degrees, and they're in basically Carhartt clothing, head to toe, because it's safety, right? In fact, you even have to back into your parking space at the facility so you're ready to go. I mean, it's like, this is a dicey situation here. So in the meeting, they're like, I got to get out of here. I'm supposed to be producing, but I'm in this stupid meeting. You know, this is what the vibe I was getting from them. Is this too much explanation? Because I want you to be like, tell us the story. But I want you to feel it. It's hot. It's weird. It's sandy. It's gritty. And these guys are big, and they're not anything but agitated at this point. And finally, the beautiful part is one guy, he literally unfolds, comes off the back wall, and he goes, soaping the wells. And then the other guys are going, and I'm going, soaping the wells, sure. And then I'm going, oh no, it must be something that happened in prison. But he says, no, soaping the wells is real. What it is they take surfactant sticks, so dry gas wells, South Texas, the groundwater literally holds down natural gas. So they shoot surfactant sticks, soap sticks, down the well. It breaks the surface tension of the water like soap does. Bubbles up. Increased production. Awesome. I'm like, yeah, we're going to shoot more soap. He says, no, we're going to shoot less. I'm like, please help me understand this. I'm so confused. Here's the thing, you go, guess what? They all come off the walls. Now they're coming to the tables and they're going, well, you don't understand. And they start explaining it to me because they are the experts. Who knows the job better than the person doing the job? Nobody. And I said, you got to explain to me what's going on. He goes, look, a lot of this stuff we own, a lot of it we lease. The soapers are automatic. They just keep shooting soap down there, and we have leases on the soapers. And I said, so what is the option? I could manually soap all the wells in my spot. Could you guys do yours right now? And you imagine those big mic hands taking a little tiny iPhone and going, boop, 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 thumping, thumping, thumping. They're calculating what it costs. They go, I think we can do $15,000 a month saving by turning those soapers back in and manually soaping our wells. And I'm going, dude, that is awesome. Because a minute ago, if I would have said, hey, let's do a mini game on soap with the wells, they would have killed me and buried me in the desert. But instead, people support what they help create, right? They came up with the idea, and it was one idea of many, and then it got fun. Because now they're coming in, they're talking about what, and I'm going, what would you want to do? Because people support what they help create. In our mini games workshop, we said, what kind of rewards? And I'm like, don't give cash. They already get 36% of their pay in bonuses. They don't need cash. What do you want? And at the time, Yeti coolers were just coming out.
Yeah,
that's right, because they were excited, and I knew. I had Googled one up. It was $369 a piece. But what did they hand me just now? 15 grand in savings a month. So I'm like, I think we could do this. Can we get the Hillcorp logo? Yeah, we can get the Hillcorp logo. What else would you want? And here's the funny thing. They go, so I'm going, this is fun. Now they're playing with me, and I'm going, okay, I'm the creative guy. I go, let's figure out a good theme for this. And I'm thinking it's going to be something like, really Western and Texas and, you know, cowboy kind of stuff. And I go, what do you guys like to do after work? What do you think they said? Drink. I'm like, totally get it. And what's the other thing? Hunt and fish, which apparently in South Texas is one thing. So I'm like, this sounds good. A Yeti cooler. You can take it hunting with you, fishing with you. You can drink with it. I mean, it sounds like the perfect gift. What else would you want? Because I want them to have something at 30 days to try the new standard out. At 60 days to hold the standard. At 90 days, so a small, a medium, large, right? I want them to go 30, 60, 90. Hot dog, hamburger, steak. And I said, the Yeti sounds like the steak to me. And they say, well, you know what else? We wear these FRCs, fire retardant clothing, what if we could get our minigame logo on it? And I'm like, well, that's cool. What's our theme going to be? Because I'm like, pow! You know, I'm like, this is going to be amazing. And they said, well, if we're doing a Yeti, we should have a Yeti theme. I'm like, well, who's the most famous Yeti you can think of? If somebody says the name, I'm going to give them a book right now. Abominable Snowman, but what? He has a name. Nope. Somebody said it. It's from Rudolph. That's the one they had in mind.
Bumble.
Who said it? Bumble it is. Do you already have one of these? Okay, let me give you one of Jack's new books. Here's the thing. I didn't know he had a name. The big, burly men in South Texas knew it was... Oh, Christian, baby, help me out. Give me one slide. The tension is killing me. Bumble, he's adorable. And they knew his name, and they wanted a shirt with Bumble on it. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Nice job. I love it. People support what they help create, correct?
Yeah.
So the beautiful part about this story is this is what they wanted, and this was actually their scoreboard. Remember I told you there was a Dairy Queen in town? These guys don't see each other all day. They show up at 5 a.m., they have a quick production meeting, because it's all about production, and then they go off in their trucks. So they said, we want the cooler. And by the way, here's the smart part. People support what they help to create. We go, we love barbecue. When we get the cooler, if we, because they weren't going to lose. They were going to get this thing. Here it is. Get the cooler. They're going to have a barbecue. And they got a supplier to pay for it. Smart, right? The FRCs, no problem. Canvas shirt, basically, but specially treated with their logo on it. And finally, the blizzard. It was like we could get together and spend some time and have a blizzard. I'm telling you, it was awesome. And the best part is, when you tell the story and you get those guys to tell the story, all of a sudden it becomes much more approachable to say we can actually affect the business more than we thought. It's not just doing the... Now, look how simple that thing is. 30, 60, 90, a hash mark for each week. A little bumble moves down the line so you can see if you're winning or losing. Did they have spreadsheets? Oh my God, you should see their field office was a single wide, plastered with telemetrics and doodads and spreadsheets. I mean, yeah, they got metrics every single day. The beautiful part is, though, they created the game, they executed the game, and look at the numbers. At $15,000 a month in outsourcing that they stopped, it's $45,000 in the quarter, $180,000 in a year, but at 10 cent profitability, it's an $18 million impact. They would have to produce $18 million to offset the savings that they created. Is it powerful? Do you think they know their critical number? I'm telling you. Is that a hallelujah? Did I just get it? I got it better than an amen. I got a hallelujah, Lord. Wow. How we doing? You all right? All right. Phenomenal. Thank you. So let's do this. Here we go. Step 7, provide a stake in the outcome. I had at least 5 or 6 conversations yesterday about this. It's in the book. What I wanted you to take away is this. You're talking about why business plans fail, because they're discretionary, they're too hard to understand, they create silos or dogfights, they don't understand the goal, or you're not teaching them. So as I told you yesterday, it's gain share, team-based, self-funding, and I've got to have you go to the book to look at it, because I'm telling you it's more than you think it is. And what we do is we actually have a device that allows you to, let me show this to you here. It's a map. Once you set your plan, this document never changes. Hang it on your huddle wall, and the performance of the business will actually show them in each quarter what level bonus they're earning. They are predicting, or forecasting rather, their own bonus, rather than you coming up with a bonus at the end of the year. This is actually in the book. It's also one of the tools that we give you as part of the getting the game process. Now, I want to wrap up quickly, so I'm going to show you a couple things here. Step 8 is keeping score. Step 9 is follow the action and forecasting. What I'd like to do is show you some different scoreboards, and this is what it looks like. A financial scoreboard. Could be a whiteboard. Could be another whiteboard. Here's a critical number scoreboard. Here's a mini game scoreboard. I mean, they look totally different than you might imagine, right? This is Goodall Homes in Nashville, Tennessee. They have a whole room full of scoreboards. It's a war room. The beautiful part about this is that every person has their own portion of the scoreboard. That's Keith Porterfield, the CEO. Their company just sold a couple of years ago to Warren Buffett. That's how good they are. Now, here's the cool thing. They take all these numbers, and they can. That's their version, right? Big whiteboards, lots of magnetics. This is an ad agency. That is a window cling. That's their whole scoreboard. Every huddle, every week, if I zoom in on it, look at the names you see there. Their customers are Nestle, Unilever, Borden Dairy, Tyson. Are you getting the point? These are big-ass customers, folks. And look at the goofy SpongeBob-looking scoreboard they have. The beauty of it is each department, as they're preparing, they have their little mini huddle in their department so they can forecast their numbers. Look at this. So you have to go up and you have to fill in your number, right? Because you're the line item owner. The beauty of it is, I asked one department to show me theirs. You may not be able to read it. It says Nestle on the anchor. And if we zoom in a little bit, here you can see each month how many thousands of dollars they're billing Nestle as a forecast. Because they asked me, are there any rules about scoreboards? And I'm like, no, there are no rules at all, as long as they work. And look at their bonus scorecard. Right along the theme. Isn't that nuts? So basically what we do is we help you set up an annual plan. You might call it a budget. And then when you take that down and you break it down into months, then we're forecasting each week. And what happens is, and again, in the book, in the process, in the class, I want to show you a video of a guy and his scoreboard. Oh, no. Is that not working, Christian? Can you see if you can make that black box run?
This
No. Okay, we're going to keep going because we do want to make sure we're on time here. Sorry about that, Christian. We'll just keep going. Let's see here. Back. I think I'm going the wrong way. I apologize, folks. This is not Christian's fault. This is because I am a wizard at electronics. Here we go. Boy, I went way far ahead. I'm sorry that didn't work. Okay, so the idea is, you see the examples of scorecards. They can be anything. And a lot of you told me you have beautiful screens. Actually, the folks from Sanford, where are you at? How many video screens do you have? 32 video screens. Are there rules about scorecards? As long as they work. If 32 scorecard panels, flat panel TVs work, use them. I love it. The more information... You get chills?
No, my sales rep at Best
Buy. Oh, your sales rep at Best Buy gets chills. I do believe that. Nice. So, here we go. Follow the action. What do we do with our scoreboards? We huddle around them weekly. You guys saw a video of the huddle. I want to share one more with you if we can. The idea is it's a cycle, right? It's a cycle. You got to prepare for the huddle because nobody wants to show up and forecast a crappy number. So you have a lot of discussions beforehand. Then you get into the huddle, you report your number, you say, this is my forecast, this is how the month will end. It's not what the week happened, it's not last month, it is how this month will end. When you get good at it, you forecast a quarter. When you watch this, I want you to know two things about it. Number one is, it's old, so it's grainy, and you'll notice that people, they're excited. There's a lot of energy, and they knew that there was a film crew in the room. There's no question. So that's number one. Number two is, you will see a mullet. Will that play? Oh, you've got to see the mullet. There we go. Not playing. Okay. It's awesome. Actually, you can see it. It's on our YouTube channel, the whole thing. The point is, I was going to test you. Where were the numbers coming from? Same conversation we've had before, right? Who's responsible for numbers? Who's running the huddle? Remember the Tasty Catering huddle we talked about yesterday? Same idea, but at the John Deere factory. So I apologize for not having that work. The main thing is what we're doing is we started at begin with the right leadership. We look at ourselves and our team. Then we say, what are we doing here? The why before the how. Open the books, teach the numbers, find the critical number, find the drivers to the critical number. Then put mini games on them, and while folks are doing that for 90 days, your design team can be building this bonus program, the first scorecards, and start huddling on a regular basis so that every week you're learning how to be a better forecaster. Those 9 steps are getting in the game. And then finally, step 10 is sustain it. How do you keep it up year over year? And that's why I said it's like an annual renewal. And if these are the principles of the game, that step 10, man, that is the one that we really want to pay attention to. Because it's like, we got to keep this thing up. So all those practices repeat, right? And the beautiful part is, when we get to this step, when we're working with companies, you actually get to see or plot out a one-page plan, a great big one-page plan. And by going through the 9 steps that we've just reviewed, guess what you get? You've already filled out all those 9 squares. The rest follow. You know, right where you're going. And I love to see companies post this wherever the common area is, so people go, they know why we're here, they know why we get up in the morning. We're actually, you can have your BHAG and your values and your purpose all there. Those are all non-numbered steps there, but we know what we're doing every single day and how it connects to the critical number. It is powerful stuff. So, what's the number one predictor of a really solid, achievable, meaningful, critical number and business plan? Buy-in. High involvement means we're involving as many people as we possibly can. And people support what they help create. And that is about it. I want to show you one more thing. It's not just money, right? It's about people. Numbers are just stories about people. This is one of our practitioners at our 28th annual conference named John Costello. And I'm hoping it'll play. Here we go.
So I've got a 45-minute commute each way to work. My wife had given me a gift card, an Audible gift card, and I was looking for a book to listen to. Believe it or not, this was my aha moment. I had read it before. It didn't resonate. Put it in page by page, chapter by chapter. I heard Jack Stack. He was talking to me. People next to me, you know, driving down the highway must know what's wrong with this guy, right? I'm shaking my head, you know, I'm crying, tears coming down, right? But stuff that he was saying made so much sense. It was like, you know, like lack of information. People make up their own story. They didn't know what was going on. Then he talked about where companies that are in bad financial situations, people are walking out the door because the company is bankrupt. And they go, if I only knew, I would have done something. I would have acted differently. So I got to the end of the book, and I knew what I had to do. I was terrified, but I knew what I had to do. So my poor managers, I walk in the door Monday. I go, hey, this is what we're doing. Now, they had heard this before from me. You know, John always got another one of these things going on. And so I was like, no, this is a good thing, right? Thank goodness there was a voice of reason in the room, and he said, okay, so you're going to open up the books and you're going to share the financials? What the heck? I said, no. It's the great game of business. I'll give you the book. You got to read it. So, first day, first things that come out of the design team, they see the numbers. They go, I thought the profit would be higher. I go, okay. Second thing, how much is the company in debt? Shared it with them, right? Saucers, but, you know, they're okay. We had finally gotten bank financing, you told me about a fixed charge covenant that was in there. This last one blew me away. Still does. Guy raises his hand. He says to me, what happens when we pay down the debt? I couldn't believe it. Why, for all these years, was I not sharing the numbers with anybody? The results have been amazing. So the bank that finally took a chance on us, the president of the bank and the chairman of the board, they know our story. They tell our story. I mean, they're amazed. They walk through our building. They see our scoreboard. They see the net profit at the bottom. The debt. So the first debt, 24 months ahead of schedule. It's amazing. The second debt, that was the second mortgage on my house. That will be paid off in 18, 10% revenue growth. In 19, I know the numbers aren't in, but we're experiencing a 20% revenue growth. Net profit, over 40%. I got to tell you, it wouldn't have been possible without these guys. So, we'll leave you with this. If you're a business owner and you're out there and you're considering doing the great game of business, I'm not sure what your story is, my advice is, you got to engage your employees. You got to tell them the whole story. You know, they can't help. I was this guy that was holding the rope. I mean, this incredibly heavy weight. There's no way that one person could support it. Now I've got a group of people, right? So you got a group of people, we're all tugging on the rope at the same time.
So, is that touching? I think John is an awesome guy, man.